Okay. Well, it's very exciting to be presenting this data here today because it really gave us a unique opportunity to compare the different ways that three states implemented school wellness policy. So I think it's a very unique study, and this is the first time we presented the endpoint data. The purpose, we're going to have three presentations today. The first will compare and contrast the changes made to nutrition environments, meal participation, and competitive food purchases during wellness policy implementation in three states with distinct regulatory environments. And I'll describe how those three environments are different. Our second presentation will identify environmental policy and process factors related to successful implementation of nutrition policies and increased meal participation. And the third one will describe critical steps related to sustaining school wellness policy. Before I get into the background, I just want to mention a terminology issue for those who aren't familiar. For this purposes of this presentation, school meals is the USDA reimbursable meal. The whole meal, whether or not the student purchasing it is getting a subsidized meal or not, but has to qualify for the subsidy. If we say free and reduced price, if we abbreviate as FRP, those are the students that are getting some level of subsidy for their meal, and full price are those that are paying the full price. And competitive foods refer to all of the other foods sold on campus. That aren't part of the meal, whether it's in a vending machine, a student store, or food service a la carte. And finally, when we refer to free foods or other foods, we're referring to all those other foods at school that aren't sold. Those are the parties, the events, the rewards, that sort of thing. All right. Well, first I thought it would be good to give some background. We know that the U.S. legislature required that all school districts adopt a comprehensive wellness policy by the 2006-07 school year. They required a written policy that was passed by the board, including nutrition guidelines, and we did find that there was a high level of compliance with the mandate for a written policy. But there are concerns regarding the actual implementation of those policies, as I'm sure many of you are aware. And the USDA, and then, so this was an opportunity for USDA to fund this project to examine the process and the impact of these local wellness policies, especially their implementation. I think we have to consider that school wellness policies are not happening in a vacuum. There's a lot of other activity around school, nutrition and physical activity. This is not everything that's happening, but a few that could really affect the results in our study. In 2001, California passed the first school nutrition standards, SB 19. Those standards never went into effect, but California kept slogging away and eventually passed some improved standards in 2007 that applied to K through 12. So just, and then at the same time, the Institute of Medicine released their food standards right around the same time that school wellness policies went into effect, were required. So a lot of movement going on. So when you look at these results, we have to realize that we don't have either a true baseline or a true endpoint. We hit a snapshot on a continuum of efforts that schools are making. I wanted to give a brief summary of the California standards, and we are measuring everything against the California standards, and I'll explain why in a minute. In California, there's only three types of beverages, as you can see here, allowed at elementary school, and at middle and high school, they allow those three types of beverages plus sports drinks at the two secondary levels. Foods is a little bit more complicated. There, they are allowed nut butter, seeds, fruits, veggies, eggs, without any limitations on nutrient content. And dairy and whole grain products have these nutrient specifications. So very few things allowed at the elementary level. At high school, there are just nutrient limits, and that would be for fat, for entrees, and calories. And for snack foods, we have what we call a 35-10-35, 35 calories from fat, 10% of sugar by weight, and 35% of 10% saturated fat and 35% of calories by weight in sugar, and a limit of 250 calories per serving. There was a different situation, however, in Pennsylvania and Iowa, and this is what makes the study interesting. Pennsylvania had voluntary standards, and then they instituted an incentive, which was increased breakfast reimbursement if you met those standards. Iowa had nothing really. I say voluntary, but there's really nothing. There were some model standards up on their website with their model wellness policy. But the Pennsylvania and Iowa standards are actually stricter than the California standards, a little bit more like the IOM standards, where they addressed some of the healthy foods. So they addressed fruits and vegetables, whole grains, and put in sodium limitations. So they were a little bit more strict and didn't allow sports drinks in either Pennsylvania or Iowa, or didn't recommend sports drinks. Again, these were voluntary. So just keep in mind that their standards were a little bit more strict. We measure everything against the California standards because to meet these standards, they would have had to also meet the California standards. Okay. In terms of methodology, we used several different methodologies. We actually went out to all the sites and observed all the meal foods, all the competitive foods, and all the food service facilities and rated them on standardized forms. We conducted group interviews on site and a survey online to key wellness personnel. And we got documentation of meal participation rates and all foods and beverage sales, competitive and meal sales, for 1 year prior and the final year of the project. All the rest of the data was collected, as you can see the dates here, September, December of 2007, at the beginning of the project and at the end of the project, after the project had ended in spring 2009. Keep in mind that the nutrition standards in California went into effect in 2007, so they were already in place, so the baseline data reflects that. But the high school beverage standards began phasing in at 50% and didn't go to full effect until at the end of the study, after the study ended. We had a lot of schools, 23 schools in California, 28 in Pennsylvania, 32 in Iowa. There were 53 demonstration schools, 30 comparison schools. We had representation of elementary, middle, and high in roughly similar proportions, a little bit more elementary in Pennsylvania. And I just wanted to point out that Iowa had several very small K-12 schools that were excluded from some of the analysis when we're looking at level. The school district characteristics, we had a pretty even division between city, suburban, smaller town, and rural settings, so nice distribution there. And our primary group in terms of income level was on schools that had 26 to 50% free and reduced price. Pretty small percentages of the really high income or the really low income groups. In terms of ethnicity, California was quite ethnically diverse. The majority of schools were either primarily Latino, some were primarily white, but we had significant proportions of African American, Asian, Native American groups. In Iowa and Pennsylvania, they were primarily white populations with small percentages of the other ethnicities. And I did want to, I'm sorry, I have an old version of my slide, the wrong one got uploaded. So I just wanted to acknowledge, before I go on, the work of all the schools that we worked with. The State Departments of Education had personnel that worked on this project, thank them. And then Eba Wood from the Food Nutrition Service of USDA, who led this project, and Missy Cody, who was the principal investigator from the Food Service Management Institute. We couldn't have done it without them. Okay, now I'd like to move on to our first presentation, which is me again. and as I mentioned, this presentation will focus on the nutrition environment of aspect of the wellness policy, so the meal foods, the dining environment, and competitive foods. I will compare and contrast accomplishments in the three states, try to answer the question, does regulation make a difference? In other words, did California do more with the foods than the other states that had looser or voluntary regulations? And were some things impacted and not others? And then discuss the implications of the finding for future regulatory and programmatic action. By way of background, I just wanted to mention that in previous studies, we had observed this phenomena, and we want to kind of see if this pans out with these schools, where as you see in the green line, no, with the pink line, when a la carte revenues go down, as you can see in year two, the second set of lines is year two, when the a la carte revenues go down when nutrition standards are put in place, either because schools intentionally pulled them out or because students didn't like them as much, so the purchases are going down, we find that meals, and that's the green line, meal revenues go up substantially and stay up. They have an initial little burst, but they stay up, so that total revenues are either unaffected by the reduction in a la carte sales, or total revenues actually improve, suggesting that reducing a la carte sales is actually beneficial to school food service. In terms of the nutrition standards in school wellness policies, we found that they are the most specific, the most thoroughly implemented, the most controversial, and they're highly integrated with the meal program, as I saw you. So these two things aren't happening in isolation. So to what extent did states implement the different aspects of the wellness policy in each state for each goal area? And what we do find is that, as you can see, that the meals and the competitive foods were the two goal areas most likely to be implemented. And I'll tell you in a minute probably why. But certainly legislation was affecting implementation of competitive foods in California, so that was quite an impetus. And even in the other states, that's one of the most implemented components, again, because it was the most specific. And then we do see that the nutrition environment ones are most likely to be affected, and the other goals, nutrition education, physical activity, generally speaking, those were harder to implement because of the funding required and the lack of state requirements. Another key factor was leadership, and what we found is that school food service not only was playing a leadership role in terms of the food environment, many food service directors are playing a leadership role for the district-wide wellness policy. So food service really stepped up and took over an area that's very large for them, and therefore we see probably more impact on the areas where they have more control. In terms of challenge, what's very interesting, I think, is that competitive foods also tended to be one of the least challenging ones to implement, and I think really for the same reason. And of course, least challenging in California, again, the backup of the law makes it easier to implement. Many principals would say to me, oh, I'm so glad that law is there because now I don't have to defend this. I can say, can't do anything, it's the law. So they really found that to be supportive. And again, we do see that California tends to find most of these less challenging, and the more challenging ones are like physical activity a lot because of the cost factor. And school meals was one of the least challenging. Oh, no, I'm sorry, nutrition ed because of the cost factor, sorry. And foods offered, those rewards in classroom foods, again, there's no legislation to back those changes up, although a lot of schools try to do it. Okay, so how adherent were the states to the California standards? Well, here we see for elementary schools and secondary schools, foods and beverages, we see we got mixed levels of compliance with the California standards, but clearly higher levels of compliance in California, suggesting that the law did have an effect, and the lowest levels of compliance in Iowa, which had the least amount of no incentive and no requirement. We've got 100% compliance with beverages and foods at the elementary school. Oh, and elementary schools tend to have higher compliance than secondary schools, and there tends to be higher compliances for beverages than for food. Part of that is, do you remember when I was explaining the standards, how simple the standards were for beverages? Really easy to understand. The food ones are much more complicated. What about total number of items? Because we're not just concerned about whether they're compliant with the standards, but how much food is being pushed to these children between their meals. And what we found is that there does not seem to be an effect, and this is the average number of items per school, that this does not seem to have been affected by the legislation, which makes sense because the legislation didn't limit the number of things that could be offered. So California actually reduced quite a bit, believe it or not, at secondary level, but remains having the greatest variety of items offered. So that might be a weakness in the current regulation, with Iowa coming in second and Pennsylvania having the least variety of items at the secondary level. Very few items are offered at the elementary level. As you can see, there's a marked contrast between elementary and secondary. Okay, but we're not only concerned with compliance with the standards, because we know the standards aren't perfect, but did the schools take the initiative and really switch to a really healthy selection of foods and beverages? Well, we can kind of look at this and decide. Do we think that this, and we can look at the differences between, this is just California, Pennsylvania, because Iowa, which we are to congratulate them, does not have any competitive foods and beverages at the elementary level. That would be a good thing to hold on to. Well, what we see here is that California does have all compliant foods, but look at the two categories that came in, frozen desserts, and they added cookies and pastries. Now, there's very few of these here, so I wouldn't want to make a lot of this, but that's interesting that they went for relatively unhealthy compliant foods. And Pennsylvania just has a much more variety and array. What is encouraging is the fruits and vegetables that are there in second highest proportion. And here's the situation at the secondary schools. So I would say that the prior one was of questionable healthiness, even though it was pretty compliant. And what do people think about this? So we see that in California, we do see California having the largest proportion of those compliant alternative foods, the baked chips, the snack bars, the crackers and popcorn, and the cookies and pastries, a lot of which are compliant in California. They make them that way. Whereas in the other states, we see higher levels of proportions of cookies and pastries, chips, candy, fruit, frozen desserts, and entrees. So again, the legislation seems to be having an effect in moving towards those more of those compliant items, but they still are of questionable healthfulness, and we're still predominantly have marginally healthy compliant items and then the non-compliant items that were unhealthy all along. And also the California legislation ended up discouraging entrees because of the fat limitation. It ends up it's hard to get an entree that meets those specifications. That's why Iowa and Pennsylvania keep offering those, but not California. In terms of beverages, they did pretty good in elementary school. We've just got milk and juices, so there's no real problem there. And I don't think any major difference between the states. Unfortunately, probably a fairly large proportion of those milks are sweetened. At the secondary level, again, we see a more complicated situation and many more products being offered. And again, we see the influence of the legislation. California having water and sports drinks, both of which are compliant in larger proportions. And then we're getting higher levels of soda sweetened beverages, well, at least in Pennsylvania. And also the other states offer more juices and more milk, though, also. And again, what's really of concern is that if you add up the sports drinks and the sodas and sweetened beverages together, we've got very high proportions of sweetened beverages still being offered in the schools. Okay, so that was the picture with competitive foods and the effect of the legislation on competitive foods. Now we'll move on to the meal foods and see if, even though there was no specific changes in meal foods required in the wellness policy, we're wondering, did schools take the initiative and improve their meals and try to cut down on the competitive foods and get kids to eat the meal instead? Did they take that approach? So this is the distribution of foods, and these bars indicate the percent of schools that offered at least one item. And I'm sorry, this is an old slide. You need to switch the words Mexican and salad. Those had got inverted. And what we find is a predominance of fast foods still in California and Iowa, with Pennsylvania, their number one item being sandwiches. But sandwiches and fast food accounts for most of the meals being offered. We can see that California has much more ethnic variety with Mexican and Asian foods. Again, disregard the salad, that's the one below it. and then very small amounts of dairy-based products or other things. We did see some interesting changes, even though there still is a lot of fast food being offered. And this is usually fast food. This is not branded fast food, usually. What we did see is some encouraging trends, some reductions in the amount of fast food. So this picture looked worse at the beginning of the project, although a discouraging trend there in Iowa with the increase. We're getting some increases in the sandwiches, which could be a fairly healthy food. Unfortunately, decreases in salad. And salads were only offered at about a third of the school, so that could really be an area for improvement. That's entree salads or salad bars. Decreases in some of the ethnic foods, Mexican and Asian foods, but a very promising increase in Pennsylvania. So it looks like schools were fooling around with trying to get more healthful entrees going. And there were several encouraging observations. Generally speaking, they offered 6 different fruits and vegetables at lunch, which I think is quite impressive, but unfortunately, 1/2 of those were fresh, and about 1/4 were not apples, oranges, or bananas. They were other varieties, and we know kids like the other varieties. Unfortunately, though, this actually decreased during the project, and we're thinking that's because of financial issues, because of the economic downturn and the increase in food prices. French fries were only offered at 32% of schools. That was pretty good. On the day of the observation. And we got decreases in the amount of French fries being offered, and they were almost all baked. So another promising trend. Whole grains, I was really surprised by this, offered at 60% of the schools. And of those schools that offered them, 45% of grain products were whole grain. So again, I think this is an effort schools are consciously making to get whole grains in there. Unfortunately, again, during the project, this proportion decreased, again, I think because of the price issues. Over 90% of milk was lower non-fat, but about a half of it was sweetened. And 37% of the schools offered juice, but at least sweetened juice was very rare, so not a big problem area. There were some notable differences between the states. Pennsylvania, we really need to congratulate for the work they're doing with whole grains. They had the highest level, and the other states decreased their provision of whole grains, and Pennsylvania did not. So they're doing something there to keep whole grains and be sure that kids are eating them. California, unfortunately, is not only the fast food state, we had the most fast food, we also had the most French fries, but we did decrease, so we're working on it. And Iowa is to be congratulated for the fruits and vegetables. They had the highest level and the biggest increase in the provision of fruits and vegetables at lunch. Meal facilities are really critical for if you're trying to attract students. If you're trying to prepare healthy foods on site, you need the right facilities, which many schools don't have. And also attractive facilities are more likely to attract the students to the meal program. So we looked at various aspects of meal facilities. I'm giving you just a few examples here. Food courts, where you have little stations usually by a certain type of food, like Italian or Asian, you have these little stations around. It sort of feels like a mall, so a lot of, especially secondary school students, like it a lot. Those were at 16% of schools, and this increased. So schools were switching to this style, and it was the most common in Pennsylvania. I mentioned about the salad bars. Those didn't change much, and they're offered in about a third of the schools, but they're most common in California. 88% of the schools had a dining area, an indoor dining area. But that was almost 100% in Pennsylvania and Iowa. But one in four schools in California still does not have an indoor dining area. The students have to eat outside or crowd into the hallways. At some schools, they actually get served outside. I had one school come out, unload all the serving equipment. They do that every lunch. And then others, kids have to stand in line in the rain to get their food because it's just a window to the outside. So this is a very interesting distinction between the three states, because only in California, because of the weather, is this even a possibility. But clearly, we're not given the importance that the meal facilities need if schools are not providing those basic services. And believe me, it's not food service that doesn't want to have the dining area. So, also, the meal facilities tended to be plain. Maybe some of them kind of described as pleasant. They were plain, but they were not something that students would go, wow, this is great, I want to be here. There are very few exceptional ambiances, so another area for improvement. But we were getting improvements in those areas too. You see all the plus marks that schools, you know, are making the effort, they're switching over. Line length, of course, as we all know, is long. We measured the longest point in the line during the meal service, and it averaged 63 and was the longest in Pennsylvania. But those were, when I put a positive, that means a positive change. So they were decreasing the line lengths a lot by putting in more points of service to serve the students and get the lines down, because we know long lines drive students over to the a la carte. And 36 to 79, depending on the state, of students had, the last student had less than 20 minutes to eat. And again, but we're seeing improvements in that area. So we're particularly seeing improvements in service in order to attract students to the meal program. Okay. So overall, we're seeing small improvements, but good improvements. The foods aren't quite as healthy as we want them to be, but they have gotten better. But really, we really need to support food service more to really make the changes that are going to make a big difference in the meals at school. So what was the impact of these changes on the bottom line? Well, what we found is that meal participation, breakfast and lunch, increased in every state, but particularly in California. Is this because of the nutrition standards? I don't know, but I think it's also because food service is consciously using that strategy. Let's de-emphasize a la carte. I'm not going to work that much on it. I'm really going to work on the meals. That really seems to be bringing the students over to the meal program. This increased meal participation resulted in increased meal revenues. So we're seeing it. We don't have data from Iowa, so Iowa may have seen these changes also, but we don't have the data. Meal revenues increased in both California and Pennsylvania by a substantial amount, and this is per student per day figures. A la carte decreased in California from 34 to 22 cents a student, probably again because that phenomenon I described, they're consciously doing, trying to do that. Whereas in Pennsylvania, it increased. The a la carte increased. In both cases, however, whether you decrease the a la carte or not, they still got a total revenue increase in both states. So clearly, meal revenues drive the health of food service finances, and that's really where the emphasis should be. And what's really encouraging is to have students only spending 22 cents a day on average on those a la carte foods. So Pennsylvania did not change its dependence on a la carte. They went from 22% of revenues from a la carte to 23% at endpoint. And California decreased their dependency to only 11% on average. In terms of expenses, of course, that was just revenues. But what about expenses? Well, we find that most schools reported increased expenses, and they were mainly food and beverage costs because, as I described before, food and beverage costs increased during this, but also labor costs, equipment and supplies. But almost all of them thought these increased expenses, no, some, but not most, thought the increased expenses were due in part to the wellness policy. So most did not think it was the wellness policy that caused the increased expenses, especially in California. And 78 to 52% thought that the revenue increase that they experienced covered these expenses. So the majority, two-thirds, thought that their bottom line had not gotten worse over this process, so that wellness policy implementation is financially viable, and so is the implementation of nutrition standards. The changes in the non-food service arena were minimal. I do want to keep in mind that many of these schools eliminated their competitive food sales, which is wonderful. They eliminated them, so they weren't even there at many of the schools, which also helps increase meal participation. And the profits were just really small, and they increased slightly at California and decreased quite a bit in Pennsylvania. Although at the Pennsylvania data, they had incomplete data, so I'm not sure if this is a real effect. But even so, what it's showing is that it looks like the California strategy, again, of reducing a la carte actually worked better, and they had less reduction in the competitive foods. So in conclusion, it appears that specific enforceable legislation is effective in stimulating change. It stimulated more change in California in the areas we measured than in the other states. It's an impetus to action, and it makes change easier. The more specific legislation led to greater change. This, to me, suggests that wellness policy legislation could benefit from more specificity and accountability if we want to see thorough implementation. But I want to keep in mind, legislation is not enough. We found that you need to have leadership, you need to have engagement of stakeholders both in the school and surrounding the school, and at the state level and at the federal level, because everyone does what they're held accountable for and what people care about. You need resources. How can food service make those changes that we're recommending if they don't have the funding to do so, or the skills and support to do so? Administrative support and funding are the two things food service asks for the most. And then accountability on multiple levels so that this doesn't die, this effort doesn't die. We keep making these positive changes. Legislation also needs to be thoughtfully constructed. Schools made much progress, but they need further improvements. There are weaknesses in both the California and U.S. legislation. We didn't see the level of change that we're really hoping for. The nutrition standards may need to be revised. They just, you know, if frozen desserts, cookies and pastries, sports drinks, and everything are fitting in these standards, they need to be revised. And the nutrition standards are not enough, as I mentioned before. We really do need to address the school nutrition as a whole. Because everything is related, nutrition education, school meals, competitive foods, they're all important. And finally, we found that providing fewer and or healthier competitive foods is actually financially beneficial to school food service. However, it is not a panacea. It does not resolve their worsening bottom lines that they are experiencing. So I think that really we have to seize this opportunity that school wellness and competitive food standards have presented to us and make sure that we keep this effort alive, and I think it's really all of us at all levels have a role to play in that. And finally, I'd like to thank everyone that participated in California, all the participating schools, the principal investigator from California, Patricia Crawford, the list of California evaluation team, one of which is here, Janice Kao. The California Department of Education Nutrition Services Division, who ran this project and funded us, the United States Department of Agriculture Food Nutrition Service for funding the project, and of course, our colleagues in Pennsylvania, Iowa, and at the National Food Service Management Institute. Thank you.